Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Here on The Deep State, we go deep into stories that the mainstream media doesn't want you to know. The Deep State imprisoned me once upon a time. Well, now we're going after the Deep State. I want to bring on Julian Dorey. Julian has been one of the best podcasts out there, and I have to say it was one of my favorite to appear on recently. Julian, I'm proud to call a friend. Julian, welcome to the show. It seems to me that there's going to be damage here to Western alliances, right? Donald Trump has already offended a lot of NATO leaders in the first term by talking about the old Europe versus the new Europe, for example, and allying himself with the likes of Hungary and Viktor Orban in Hungary, with Poland and Romania, at the expense of the U.S. relationship with the U.K., France, Germany, and others. I mean, Spain, Italy, Denmark. Oh my God! How many times did he threaten to invade Greenland and to take it by force? What are the long-term consequences of these splits within NATO, for example, on longer-term U.S. alliances and foreign policy?
You know, if he actually splits economically and contractually, if you will, it's not really the right way to put it, but you know what I mean,
sure,
like on an official basis, then it could have serious reverberating effects in the future, like a Brexit did to the U.K., because that was like written in stone and they left and they're not in the Schengen zone. Or is that the right way to put it?
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know what I mean? So yes. that's like not officially what it is, but like right now he's threatening some of that stuff, but like we're still in NATO, you know, we're still a part of all the stuff and people's feathers are all ruffled. But the fact of the matter is, I'll use another precedent. Look at the relationship between the United States and Israel when Obama was in office. Mm-hmm. Wasn't good.
No.
The day Trump got in office, it was great again. Mm-hmm. You know, no
That's
pun intended.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So yeah, it can change like that based on an administration if there are not actual agreed upon, unbreakable, broken bonds. Sorry for the pun there or whatever that is. But like if something like that were to occur, then yeah, it could have reverberating effects. Now, where Donald Trump has always had a point on this, and I agree with him, is that we provide a lot more, and they, places like NATO, financially aren't supporting it like we do and rely on us too much without getting anything in return and kind of use us. I agree. That was rhetoric he had back in 2015, 2016. I agree with that. But there's a way to go about it. You know, there's a way to play hardball without, no pun intended, nuking everything.
Right.
And I'm a very moderate guy politically, extremely moderate. And I'm a huge proponent of middle ground solutions. And sometimes you have to pull a little bit to get people back towards the center. I understand that. That's the dynamics of physics. But, you know, you don't have to rip the tablecloth from underneath all the silverware and take the silverware and plates with it.
That's right. That's right. I've got to ask you a couple of questions about American politics. And I'm going to preface it by saying I've been a political animal since I was 16 years old, obsessed with politics, volunteering on campaigns. I've never missed an election until my right to vote was taken away from me, and then I missed one before I had it reinstated. But I've always been obsessed. I think this is the very first time in my life when I genuinely don't have the foggiest idea, not only who the next president's going to be, but who the nominees of the two main political parties might be. And if you go onto some of these predictive apps like Kalshi, for example, I actually looked at this yesterday. There are 44 Democrats and 26 Republicans being talked about as presidential candidates. What's What's going on with that? What kind of conclusions should we draw from that?
I mean, first of all, who wants the job?
Seriously, right? You're probably going to be prosecuted and indicted once you leave office anyway.
Yeah, what kind of person wants the job? What is their mental predisposition for wanting
it? You have to be a narcissist and probably a sociopath on top of it.
Right.
Sure.
So that's a bad start because people are awake to that now, and it's probably even more so that case, I'm guessing, than it was even 30 years ago. So Bill Clinton was in office, by the
way. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's really saying something. But, you know, I texted some mutual friends of ours in February and early March. I remember texting Danny Jones this. I talked with Deef about it. And then actually Glenn Greenwald went on Danny's show at the end of March and said this, which had me clocking it. And I said, you know, I try to look at things just by patterns, 30,000 feet in the air, and things change like crazy. But to me, I said, if he runs and if they don't kill him, and those are two big ifs, the next president I think will be Tucker Carlson. And I don't say that as a political statement. I don't say that against or in support of him. I say that just as a predictive idea. And the reason I say that is because he can run to the right of woke and to the left of the neocons. Mm-hmm. And then he also has the third and fourth part, which is he has celebrity status and a lot of charisma.
Yeah.
And he's also way more schooled. And even if you disagree with everything he says or the evidence he brings, and you are free to do that, he's way more schooled than anyone maybe to ever run for office is in being able to body bag someone in a debate on the spot like that. I mean, I have seen Tucker Carlson make points before that when I think about it later, I think he's like actually entirely wrong. And yet when I was watching it, I was like, damn, this cooking. You know what I mean? Like, he has that. And, you know, that's why Glenn brought it up. He's like, he says he's not going to do it. And, you know, Trump said the same thing.
Julian, I've begged him to do it.
That's kind of what I think.
I've begged
you
him.
What?
I've begged him to run for president. And he
have.
Oh, yeah. And he told me that Glenn has begged him. And he said, yeah. I'm not interested at all. And then when I said something as recently as a week ago, he said, I'm not going to run. It's not going to happen. And I said, if you change your mind, I'm all in. And I will do whatever you want me to do to help get the word out. Whatever. I think that he would be an absolutely brilliant presidential candidate and president. And I will add, too, I think he's probably the only person in America who could run as an independent and be a viable nationwide presidential candidate.
I agree with that.
In 2016, I had just gotten out of prison a year earlier, and Governor Gary Johnson, he had been a Republican governor of New Mexico. He was running as the Libertarian Party's presidential nominee.
Yes.
He asked me if I would travel with him around the Western United States and introduce him at his various campaign stops. I jumped at the chance just because I've always liked and respected Gary. He was a terrific governor. He cut taxes something like 175 times in 4 years. It was ridiculous. It set a record for the state. And so we got to thinking that things were so upside down in American politics in 2016 that he had an actual shot of winning his home state of New Mexico and maybe the state of Utah. He didn't. He got something like 9% in Utah. The polls had him in the low 20s. That didn't work out. Yeah. He did well in New Mexico, but that didn't work out. Hillary Clinton won New Mexico. Donald Trump won Utah. I think Tucker Carlson is an entirely different animal.
Oh, yeah.
I think that you are you're exactly right when you say that he runs to the right of woke and to the left of neocon. I think the polls are very clear that Americans are sick and tired of these forever wars but they also hate with a capital H this woke nonsense about trans this and trans that and women using men's bathrooms and competing in women's sports. There is a happy medium. And I think that right now in today's America, he represents it.
That's a wild thing to say, and it's wild that you're not. If you're wrong, you're not that wrong, you know? If you would have told me that 2 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. And it's like things are so whip-a-rolled all over that it's like, yeah, you know, some people are like, that makes sense. My whole thing is, again, we can look at it with someone lower down the totem pole like a Bongino or whatever. We can look at it with Trump and things that happen. What happens when you get in there? And why would Tucker Carlson be any different? I'm an optimist as a person. I love humanity. I love the world. I love that I wake up alive every day and I continue to go about my life with a smile on my face. I still, you know, as a part of my job, call out the things that are bad. But it's like, you know, cynically on politics, that's where my head is. And you wonder if a guy like that is just castrated the moment he gets in there, regardless of what you think of his politics. He is a maverick kind of guy. Like, I'm Tucker Carlson. I'll do what I want.
Yeah.
Is he really going to be able to do that?
Right. Because don't forget, there is a deep state. That's the whole point of this show. There is a deep state. We've talked about it 1,000,000,000 times. When you've got people at the CIA, at the FBI, at the Pentagon, at NSA, and they are there for 25, 30, 35 years, and they know presidents come and go every 4 years, every 8 years, and so they can just ignore this president, or they can manipulate the president. That's the danger. That's why the country's broken.
Yep. And again, it's like, how deep is the root of that tree?
Yeah.
And is it possible to be able to pull out? You know, and that's where it gets difficult. But my approach in my job has always been to, like, stay out of the politics. First of all, I do, like, no domestic politics on my show. I hate it. I have no interest in it. The politics we do is, like, geopolitics because everybody's guilty, so it's easy.
That's right.
You know, but I've never accepted having a politician on my show or someone running for public office. Like, that's been a rule. Never say never, but, like, you know, I'm 410 episodes in, and that's been the rule for 6 years. And part of it is, like, I have to be able to criticize or praise without any skin in the game.
That's right.
And, you know, I think that, unfortunately, there is now this dynamic where politicians, whether it be through podcasts or social media or whatever, you know, a lot of them come across as cringe and fake. But then you get the right charismatic one. They can use these tools to seem buddy-buddy or seem like one of you and all that. And it's like, are you? Are you? And I wonder about that with everyone. I wonder about that with Tucker, too. I don't know the guy. You do. But, you know, it's like, is this a long campaign for him to actually get to that role? And what's he trying to do when he gets there that he's not telling us right now? Because I don't know that I believe, like, to come back to the cynical point, I don't know that I believe that any outsider actually can end up in there. Because, like, I really don't know that Trump was an outsider at this point. I always gave him credit for that. Sure. I was like, well, you know, he's an outsider. He was the guy that wasn't even allowed in some of the elite communities in New York because they were like, oh, God, the fucking Trump guy with the signs. Was that really the case? I don't know.
Yeah.
Were you there? I wasn't there, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you know, we have – right now we have the system we have, and you got to operate with the best possible solution. And where I can bring on people from across the spectrum to talk about the shit that's going on in the world and how it pertains to us – to give people information to decide for themselves. And then if people use that information in the context of them making their votes in November when they go to do it for whoever they do it, great. I'm just not going to tell you what to do or ever support anyone. It's just how I got to roll.
I've got to ask you about the mainstream media in the United States. Mm. You've criticized mainstream media coverage, rightfully so in my view. What do you think they're getting the most wrong now about these major international issues? Epstein, Iran, Ukraine, we could pick a half a dozen others.
Well, they're all passively on the payroll. I'll even give them some credit here and not just say they're all literally in on it, which you can make that argument. Yeah. Certainly, there's some people that certainly are. But, like, when all of your ads are for pharma companies, mm-hmm. you're probably going to show for pharma companies. Mm-hmm. When all of your analysts that give you access to stories are from the deep state, mm-hmm. right? And you're reporting stories. You're not sitting here bullshitting with people and, you know, around on even like a Theo Vaughn podcast where it's fun comedy and whatever, and it's like a different layer. Like, no, you're doing the whole I'm tweeting out and breaking stories every single day, and that means that my job is – my income is derived from that. Like, that's their standard in mainstream media. When you have that impetus or that incentive, mm-hmm. now look at the people who control the access to the gates of that incentive. Mm-hmm. Who are those people? What are their motives? They're not good.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I think you're right. You and I have had conversations in the past about the Freedom of Information Act and what some of the revelations from FOIA have revealed about the mainstream media. I've got a friend, Jason Leopold, who's an investigative journalist from Bloomberg. Jason, I think, is an unsung hero in the American media. He was called a FOIA terrorist, a Freedom of Information Act terrorist, by George W. Bush's Pentagon spokesman because...
That's a compliment.
Isn't that a compliment? He filed more Freedom of Information Act requests than any other person on the planet. And among the things that he found, well, he's the one who broke the Hillary Clinton email server scandal just by filing a Freedom of Information Act request. But he told me... one time, this is about 10 years ago, that he was bored over Christmas vacation. Christmas break, nothing's happening, no stories, everybody's home with their families. So he filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the CIA. And he asked for all correspondence over the previous year between the CIA and all American journalists. And what happens is, you know, the law, the Freedom of Information Act says that the government entity has 60 days to respond. Well, they don't respond in 60 days. They'll either, you know, take 60 years or they just won't respond at all. I filed a FOIA request in 2011. I was thinking of writing a story. I'm still waiting for a response from 2011. And every few years, I get a letter just saying, oh, we haven't forgotten you. It's just that the queue is long. I'll never get a response. Right. Okay, so what he does is he, on the 61st day, he sues the CIA. And because the law is clear and it says you have 60 days, he wins every single time. And the CIA has to pay his legal fees because it's in the wrong. So he files this lawsuit. He sues them on day 61. He wins. They release thousands and thousands of emails between the CIA and... an American journalist. He found a couple of very interesting things, two interesting things. Number one, Ken Delanian, who used to be the head national security correspondent for the Los Angeles Times and now is the chief national security correspondent at NBC News, was sending articles, his own articles, to the CIA for clearance and approval before sending them to his own editor. That's the death of journalism right there in a nutshell. Another thing he found goes to the point that you just made a moment ago. There was a young, hungry, independent journalist who really did stumble on some real story having to do with the CIA. And
Hastings?
The CIA wrote back and said, "So help us God, if you publish that story, you will never be invited to the CIA Christmas party ever again, and we will never give you off-the-record classified briefings ever again." And so he killed his own story That's how Washington works. In the last 4 weeks, the Washington Post, now owned by the American oligarch Jeff Bezos, I love using that word because it's always meant as an epithet, and they only use it for Russians and Ukrainians, so I use it for Americans. The American oligarch Jeff Bezos has fired 80% of the staff of the Washington Post, and in the last 4 weeks, they have shut down their investigative journalism function. It's the death of investigative journalism. So now we have to rely on outlets like ProPublica or the Brennan Center or independent journalists who have the hunger to dig for these stories. They're not going to make any money. They're not going to make the $1 million plus a year that Ken Delanian is making at NBC News. And I know that because I know the guy that he replaced and I know what he was making. You know, we're going to have to rely on local reporters who dig through the mayor's trash can to find evidence of wrongdoing. And believe it or not, that won the Pulitzer Prize last year. So
what was that?
In Oregon, two local reporters from a free newspaper had information that the mayor and the city council chairman were corrupt, so they just stole their garbage. And these two politicians were stupid enough to throw away documents proving their own corruption. And so this little local rag won the Pulitzer Prize for investigative journalism.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing because I'm just thinking about the memes of you being like, he's in a dumpster all night long. Did he smell like I was with a woman?
For those of you who don't understand, go to TikTok.
I said to someone the other day, I'm like, yo, you realize John is like the Andrew Tate of 2026? Not like the style, just like Andrew Tate in No, hear me out. Andrew Tate in 2022, just like when he was everywhere. I'm like, John's just everywhere now. And oh my God, the cameo clips and everything are just, I get people sending me 4 to 5 a day. Literally 4 to 5 a day. I'm like, yo, look what this motherfucker John just said on cameo. I'm like, bam, if you only knew. But it's just, yeah. I mean, you're like, I don't know if you understand this, but you're so big that there are memes of your meme.
Oh, my God.
So, like, your story about, I laughed, the guy died, it's horrible, but, like, the Iraqi janitor, there will now be a picture of a dude who's not you looking up at the sky of Scud missiles coming at him, and it'll say at the top, like, something referring to something that just happened in the world, and it'll be like, meanwhile, the Iraqi janitor. And people know what the reference is to. Your name's not even mentioned, and they're like, yo, if you know, you know, bro. And then there'll be a meme of that meme. It's just like,
how do I get paid for all this stuff, right?
That's what I'm saying.
I have to figure out.
You keep making those cameos. Do you know, you Deef and I were down seeing Danny and Matt at like the same time you were, and then Danny tells me the next day that you were at the same hotel. And he's like, but don't worry, John was so busy making cameos, he'd never been able to see you guys anyway.
Joe Rogan mentioned me last Friday. Somehow he and a guest got onto the topic of cameos, and they went to cameo.com to see who the leader was. And he said, oh my God, John Kiriakou broke Cameo. I'll tell you what, I did so many cameos last month. I did 900 in the month of March that the CEO of Cameo flew to Washington to take me to lunch.
Oh, my God.
I broke the all-time record.
People, I don't know if people, if you know this, but people have you do these cameos, and then they upload it to the internet with the edit on it and get millions of views.
Crazy. Crazy.
It's nuts. Like, it's absolutely, you know,
God bless capitalism, I guess is all I can say. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Okay, we have 3 minutes. I have one last question for you. Final question. When you connect Epstein, these elite networks we're talking about, geopolitical conflict that's breaking out all over the world, are you describing a coordinated system? Or are you describing overlapping but unrelated power structures? How worried should we be about all these developments?
The answer is officially, I don't know what it is yet, but you and I are absolutely right to be very suspicious that there is some intermingled ties.
Yeah.
With one action causing the other. And there is some evidence to point to that. Do we have like the smoking gun of that? That's like, oh, yep, jury's going to find him guilty right there. We're good. No. But it is hard to believe that it's not all interconnected.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You follow the money, you follow the people who control the money, you follow the things that happen at just the perfect time. It's the perfect time every time.
Yeah.
You know? And it is hard to not cynically believe it's tied.
Yeah, I hate to agree, but I have to agree. Julian Dorey, man, it's always so good to see you. Proud to call you a friend. Thanks very much for joining
you
us.
You as well, John.
Thank you so much
for having me. It's been awesome.
Come back again.
Absolutely. Anytime you need me.
Thanks,
you know,
buddy.
I'm there.
Thank you. All the best.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much for being with us today, Julian. We'd love to have you back in the future. Good to see you. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State, and remember to always seek the truth where you are not allowed to seek the truth. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.